Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Today's episode is part three in our series about how industry qualifies opportunities and decides whether or not to bid. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. If your organization is interested in training from a team of former contracting officers, visit AskSkyway.com to learn more about how Skyway can help both government and industry teams better understand the government acquisition and contract execution process. Now let's get started with Qualifying Opportunities, Part 3. Today we're wrapping up our series on qualifying opportunities.
The great thing about the government market is that it's huge. It's full of opportunity. The bad thing about the government market is that it's huge. There are too many opportunities and you feel like you're drowning in them sometimes. One of our customers, he said to me, it's like I'm looking at a school of fish through a glass bottom boat, huge school of fish, and I'm not sure which one to catch. Because you kind of have to pick one, right? It's the thing about catching a school. You can't just catch the whole thing. And so that feeling he's describing, that's what drowning an opportunity feels like, is you have so many opportunities that you can't even pick one. And what is, just as an aside, this is not a problem that's limited to the government market. A lot of businesses struggle with this. So this targeting and qualifying thing, it's a good problem because it means that you see abundance in the market. It means that you've structured your organization to see lots of opportunities. So this is normal to go through this process, but you got to manage it.
We began this series of podcasts in episodes 182 and 187, where we talked about factors companies can use to qualify after they have targeted ideal opportunities. We also have a whole bunch of episodes on targeting, like 16, 68, 102, and we talk about targeting so much that people are probably sick of the word. For qualifying, remember that we're talking about the four R's: relationships, response, resources, and revenue. We've already covered relationships and responses in the other episodes. In this episode, we're going to cover the last two, resources and revenue.
This is an area that, as a contracting officer, I assumed people had it figured out. You know, I thought the right, quote unquote, potential offers would just see the opportunities that I was putting out. They'd see the RFIs. They would targeting and qualifying would be easy for them. And of course, I didn't know what I didn't know, right? And as it turns out, I didn't know what they didn't know. So that's why this is a valuable exercise to go through.
Before we talk about things that we know now that we didn't know then, let's stop and say thanks.
Let's say thanks to Michael Genovese. Hope I'm not butchering the name. He's a contracts manager at Booz Allen Hamilton out in San Diego, California. Thanks, Michael, for liking and sharing our content on LinkedIn. The best way for people to find this content that we're giving away for free is for people to like and share it on LinkedIn and elsewhere. So thanks for doing that.
Thanks, Michael. Back to qualifying. We know that targeting is step one. Targeting is about finding your reachable market, everything you can do, your target market, everything you should do, and your weight class, everything you actually can do. After you've gotten down to your weight class, then you really need to start qualifying.
And our customers use a tool that we've developed called the RFP score. And it's based on FAR 7.105, which is the contents of a written acquisition plan. And these questions come from that tool.
It's important to remember that the specific content of government acquisition plans will vary depending on nature, circumstances, and the stage of the acquisition. That's right out of the FAR. If you, on the industry side, understand what the government is documenting in their acquisition plan, you have a better chance of winning and performing. And that's where these questions come from. Before we get right into the questions, I want to stress something that we've talked about in each of the qualifying episodes. Qualifying is not something you do once. It's done over and over throughout the capture process. Every time you get significant new information, you kind of need to run back through the questions, or at least some of the questions, to revalidate whether or not this is still an opportunity that you should pursue.
That's one of the reasons that the RFP score is something that you can run. It's a software on our website. You can run it over and over again because the answer will change over time as these questions become more clear to you. Back to the glass bottom boat analogy, the school of fish, as you chum the water and the species of fish that you're looking for go after that type of chum, now you know which fish to chase.
What are you fishing for, sharks?
Well, all fish eat something.
Good point. All right, let's get into the questions. Remember, the questions have multiple answers and different degrees of correctness. First, we're talking about resources. And a question you should ask yourself, industry, is can you deliver on day one? Do you have the infrastructure and resources already in place to begin work if you win, or when you win, if you're optimistic?
As you should be. And the definition of deliver, can you deliver on day one? It's going to be different depending on your opportunity. Delivery might be a product which is delivered over time, or if it's a service, it's not something you just deliver once.
And deliver on day one. Day one is a concept rather than a specific day. Like you're saying, with services contracts, there may be a ramp-up period built into it, and delivery can be providing a service every day for 5 years. Remember, no contractor really has a bench. So unless you are the incumbent, the idea of being fully staffed for a services contract on day one is a bit challenging. So the potential answers for this question range from, this will be very challenging for us to deliver on day one. We need to scramble to find personnel and resources if we win. If that statement describes your situation, maybe you don't want to bid this. On the other end of the scale, if you agree with the statement, we have resources to deliver immediately because we know this work well, and we are already performing on very similar contracts, or we're the incumbent, that's a really good sign that this is an opportunity that should be on the top of your list for bidding. If you have to design, build, and deliver a product, having the infrastructure and resources in place is important. If you need lab space, if you need production space, if there are long lead parts, if you haven't planned for all of that ahead of time and you win, you have very little chance of successfully performing. And if you don't successfully perform, what happens? You get a bad CPARS, your past performance becomes questionable for future bids, or worst case, if it's a fixed price contract, you go out of business because you screwed up so badly.
And all the stuff you talked about is influenced by the acquisition plan and things like the contract type and what does the government expect? So this is why it's important that there's communication between what are the expectations of what is the definition of deliver on day one. So on the government side, make sure it's clear, or as clear as it can be, what do you expect on day one? Because if there's a disconnect on what the definition of deliver on day one is, that honeymoon zone is going to be no fun. And I've done that wrong, which is why I'm bringing it up.
Make sure you match those expectations. The next question that industry should ask themselves as they're qualifying opportunities is, do you have the resources to propose and technical expertise in-house to submit a competitive proposal? The range of answers for this one goes from, hey, we found this RFP and we don't have any of the resources we need to respond, so we're going to have to pull from teammates or hire consultants or otherwise wing it. That's not exactly what the question says. I embellished a little bit there. But if your statement in response to that question begins with, we found this RFP, you're already in trouble.
And while this is about the ability to submit the proposal, this is different than the response section we talked about last time, because this is about having the people and the skills to actually deliver a proposal, as opposed to, can you actually just do the work? It's if you just found this on, and I get these phone calls probably, well, periodically, we'll say it that way. Somebody says, hey, we just found this RFP. Can you help us write the proposal? That it's just a resource problem. You may be able to do the work. You may be able to respond and actually write a good proposal. But if you just found it and you're scrambling to find anybody, which is sometimes how it feels when people call me, you're trying to find anybody to help you write the proposal, or find a, hey, do you have a teaming partner who can do X? If you haven't been looking for that teaming partner, if you haven't been building that relationship, if you haven't been realizing that's a gap in the work you want to go after, it's probably very late. And this is one you're not qualified for, or not as qualified for.
So part of do you have the resources is really, have you planned for the resources? Are they all working on other things right now? You might have resources, but can you actually free them up to work on this? And are they the right resources to write a proposal that can win?
And that's why the best answer to this one is, we are prepared for this requirement. That's where planning comes in.
Yep.
You're preparing for it.
That's the other side from we found this RFP. Another question in the resources area that industry should ask themselves prior to deciding to submit a proposal. This one applies mostly to the smaller businesses. Question is, can you maintain your business operations during the evaluation period between proposal submission and performance start? And what if the award is delayed due to a protest? So if you're a very small company and you agree with the statement, we need this contract to be awarded without protest and on time, or we're going to lose money. We can't have these resources sit around and wait. We can't pay for those people to be idle. Or maybe there is nothing else for them to do, and we're going to go out of business if this thing isn't awarded on time.
And this isn't just for really small businesses going after mid-sized contracts. This could be for a mid-sized company going after a giant contract. It's a scale exercise. If you put all of your eggs in one basket, that's what this question is about.
Yeah.
Is can you withstand the larger the contract, the longer that cycle is. It could be what you've told stories that we both got stories of ones that have gone over a year.
Right.
From proposal to performance start, and on top of that, to the first payment.
Yeah.
It's going to be 3 months before you get revenue from this contract. Even if you win it, it could be 15 months or 18 months between when you submitted a proposal and when you get paid. Now, that's extreme. It may only be 3 months. But the point is, whatever period of time that is, if you've not thought about it, it's going to hurt.
And it's especially acute, like you said, if you're trying to fight a little bit above your weight class so that you can step up your weight class for future fights, that's where the resources can really be strained. If you're working lots of other things and just chugging along, and that's fine when this thing is awarded, you just shift resources and you start. That's a different kind of story. That's a much more comfortable place to be in.
And this is another one that, as a contracting officer, I had no context of. Yeah, I'd get calls from people every week. The ones that were calling me every week saying, hey, is it awarded yet? Is it awarded yet? Is it awarded yet? Tells me that their answer to this was the first one, is that they needed to get awarded so they can, you know, keep the lights on. Whereas the ones that checked in every 3 months on some of the longer contracts we had, they were just curious. The urgency of the answer for them wasn't as big because it's one of the things within their weight class.
Yeah, I just spoke about this topic at a conference. What happens when award is delayed? What's happening on the contractor side? It ranges from that's fine to full on panic.
Exactly.
All right, let's shift this right to the line between resources and revenue, the last of the R's in your line of questioning. The first question really does bring revenue and resources together. Industry should ask themselves, do you have the revenue and resources to manage a potentially long pre-award phase? And by pre-award, we mean from when you first hear of the requirement through when you submit the proposal. So this is through the first three acquisition time zones. Do you have an effective process to manage your opportunity pipeline for that length of time?
And the difference between this and that last question is that one was just about the resources. This one is about the revenue.
So if you agree with the statement, all of our resources are working on our number one priority, and if we work on this RFP, we're going to get distracted. The primary number one opportunity is going to take precedence. If that's where you're investing all your money and therefore your resources, maybe this new opportunity should not be one that you bid on. On the other side, if you agree with the statement, we have few proposals in work, or this RFP does not conflict with our other existing proposal work, you're in a better position to invest the money and therefore the resources into this opportunity. In the commercial world, writing proposals is a cost of doing business and comes out of profit. In the government world, writing proposals goes into your rates. The bid and proposal cost is actually an allowable cost that you can charge to the government on cost reimbursable contracts. It's an indirect cost, so it's spread across all of your programs. But what it does is increase your rates across the board. The more money that you put into writing proposals, the higher your rates are going to be.
And the critical point there is that to be competitive, you have to target and qualify effectively. Otherwise, your overhead is going to be very high, which means that your costs are going to be very high. And that's going to impact how much you can win. It's all related.
Yeah, I guess you actually could submit an infinite number of proposals if it all went into your rates and was all billable to government on the other contracts. You could hire 1,000 people to write proposals, but you'd never win anything because you're not cost effective. Your prices would be sky high too. Okay, we're going to talk about one more question. These are not all the questions, of course, but one more question that industry should ask themselves relating to revenue in order to qualify potential opportunities is, What is your expected return on investment for this opportunity? There's two pieces to this return on investment question. The first one is, what is the relationship between the potential revenue relative to the cost of tracking and submitting a proposal and everything that goes along with that? The second is, how much revenue and profit are you able to make on this? On one side, the return on investment could be very low. High effort with very low return, or we may even lose money if we win. On the other side, very low effort relative to a very high potential return on investment. That sounds great.
And the definition of effort, that's a judgment call. That could be how much effort it is to write the proposal, how much effort it is to manage the relationship, how much effort it is to recruit people to find titanium that's smelted in the United States that you can put into this piece of equipment. That effort is defined by the opportunity and by the individual company who's bidding.
I'd also say effort is related to the opportunity cost.
Yeah.
What else are you not able to do if you win this program? So we talked about the extremes. We might lose money, or, wow, we could make a whole lot of money on this. Most potential opportunities are really in between those two, where, yeah, this takes a normal amount of effort to make a normal amount of return. If you can really sniff out the ones that are low effort and low opportunity cost, and we could make a whole lot of profit, that's the best case. Avoiding ones that suck up all your time and energy, and then you lose money performing it, that's even more important. Those should be easier to see. Everything in between requires business judgment.
And when you add to this conversation the factor of it may be a strategic effort to realize, okay, this is a low return, but this is our first opportunity with this agency or with this teaming partner. There are other factors that go into this. But either way, you need to be considering those through this process.
Yeah, so it might not be your return on investment for this specific contract. It might be your return on investment over time. We win this, it enables us to win this, it enables us to win this.
So the definition of effort is a judgment call. Well, so is the definition of return. It might be financial. It might be getting a security facilities clearance for your company. That might be the return. But either way, you got to balance those out here.
When should you be asking yourself these questions? As we talked about in the previous episodes, qualifying opportunities comes during the acquisition time zones, from when the requirements are first being written and thought about all the way up to the RFP zone. Now, if you're in the RFP zone and you read that final RFP, and at that point you realize you're going to no bid this one, that it's not for you, that's unfortunate because you've already invested some time and resources to get to this point. So you kind of want to get those decisions made earlier if you can get information. And you mentioned that before, Kevin. This is where that communication from the government really helps. Remember also that in the execution time zones, the recompete zone for the incumbent, this is where it's overlapping with the acquisition time zone. So the requirement zone and the market research zone are occurring during the recompete zone, which is the tail end of the performance zone for the incumbent.
And we cover the acquisition time zones in episode 3 and the execution time zones in episode 84.
Let's focus on why this is important again, Kevin.
Well, too many targets, it's overwhelming. And so qualifying early and often is critical. On the resources side, part of qualifying is being able to deliver, right? So the resources on how you will respond, win, and deliver profitably is why the third R is resources. Because qualifying at this gate, it's critical to the mission. I mean, you mentioned before, if you can't deliver, then you can't deliver under the contract. And the point of the contract is to serve somebody who needs their mission met.
And the last R is revenue. Not only the revenue, the money to be able to bid and perform, but how much revenue will you actually make at the end? Sometimes we vilify revenue and profit. But as we discussed in a whole separate episode about profit, without it, companies don't survive. How they can use that profit and how much they make is really decided by the market.
Revenue is like oxygen. Without it, companies die.
So don't be scared, government people, if companies bid a high profit on a competitive acquisition. They're bidding based on the opportunity cost of that opportunity. If they can make more money somewhere else, they won't bid it. And they're not going to bid more profit than they think they can make on this effort and still win. The competition itself drives them lower. So don't be afraid of profit.
Since we're talking about the government side, why the government cares, back to communication. The reason these resources and revenue concepts are so important is that they need to communicate. The government needs to communicate what resources are needed to deliver the contract. If the contractor doesn't understand, the contractor shows up at the honeymoon zone or at the first meeting during the honeymoon zone and misunderstands what's expected on day one, that's on the government side. Because the RFP was what drove that. So if an offer can't deliver or can't deliver profitably, they're going to self-eliminate during the RFP zone.
If they understand.
Exactly. It's critical that the contractors understand what's expected so they can self-eliminate. Because if they don't understand it, if they're just guessing, then they end up bidding on stuff they shouldn't go after.
Yeah, government folks, if there's confusion during that RFP phase and proposal phase, when it comes to execution after award, you could drive a company out of business and still get nothing for your customer, for the mission. And that's the only thing that really matters here.
Yeah, making sure the contract delivers what it's supposed to. Because there is risk of this miscommunication. We go back to expectations. A misaligned expectations lead to two different risks. On one end of the spectrum, offers may not bid on something that could be a perfect fit for them because they realize they can't make money. They can't respond. They can't manage it through these four R's. And so they walk away. And they're the perfect company. They shouldn't have walked away.
Right. It may be because the acquisition strategy chosen, if it's low price, technically acceptable, offers may not want to bid on the floor to do this. They may have other opportunities where they can make more money. Or if the way the requirements are written takes away any chance for contractors to have margin to safely deliver this and still make money, they may not want to be a part of that.
And on the other end of the spectrum, offers may chase the white whale, the large contract with large multiple award contract that has huge opportunity because they don't understand the resources that are required. They don't understand that it's going to be a knife fight to compete for every single task order. And they don't realize the amount of effort the government's expecting them to put into each one of those task orders for the next, 5 years.
What we're saying here is the more the government shares and allows contractors to qualify and therefore self-eliminate, the better acquisition results you're going to have. On one side of it, you may get no proposals or proposals from offers who it's not a perfect fit for, minimally qualified offers when there were actually better qualified offers that chose not to bid. On the other side, you may get proposals from everybody under the sun and spend years evaluating those proposals.
Literally.
I think we've covered the industry side pretty well here. The quality of industry's decision-making skills on where to apply the resources and revenue for bids and for future work, that makes all the difference between successful and unsuccessful companies. The better you qualify, the more work you're going to win at the lowest cost, both dollars and opportunity cost.
And with the most tightly aligned expectations between both sides.
All right, Kevin, let's wrap this up.
On the government side, help the offers know what resources they'll need to deliver by communicating early and often. We're back to the communication. Communicating early helps them decide what to go after. If they can't win or they can't perform, they shouldn't bid. Both of those results are bad. On the industry side, when you're qualifying, it's not what the opportunity will get you, it's what it'll cost you. Qualify opportunities deep enough to know that you can do the work, you can actually make a profit doing the work. If you can't get the answers you need in order to be able to qualify properly, don't guess. Just walk away. I know it's hard to walk away from opportunities. That's why most people don't do it. The definition of focus is not picking one thing and chasing after it ruthlessly. It's ignoring the 99 things that are trying to distract you that will keep you from staying on the path where you can actually win work and perform well.
Yeah, companies just can't bid on every potential opportunity. The difference between being successful and not often comes down to their ability to say no. Just like you said, ignore the 99 things that are distracting you that you can't win or can't perform if you accidentally win, and focus on the very few things that you have the best chance of winning and the best chance of making a good return on investment for. The formula for disaster is if you win something that you shouldn't win, then you start pulling your best resources from other programs to try to save this loser of a program, but it can't be saved. So it's going down in flames, and your existing programs start struggling because all the best resources are on fire with the program that's going down. It's a horrible downward spiral, and I've seen it happen more than once.
It's like an infection. It just keeps spreading, and it's pulling all of the good from your other contracts, and it all started with not qualifying it properly and ending up with a contract that you shouldn't have gone after. But yeah, I've seen it too. It actually happens.
All right, that's it for today. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
See you, Paul.
Thanks for joining us today, and thanks to our sponsor, Skyway Acquisition. If you need help qualifying opportunities, visit AskSkyway.com. We'll see you next week.